No one unless home is the mouth of a shark. You only run for the border when you see the whole city running as well. Your neighbors running faster than you, breath bloody in their throats. The boy you went to school with, who kissed you dizzy behind the old tin factory, is holding a gun bigger than his body. You only leave home when home won't let you stay. You have to understand that no one puts their children in a boat unless the water is safer than the land. I want to go home. But home is the mouth of a shark. Home is the barrel of a gun. And no one would leave home unless home chased you to the shore. Unless home told you to quicken your legs, leave your clothes behind, crawl through the desert, wade through the ocean. Drown, save, beg, forget pride. Your survival is more important. No one leaves home until home is a sweaty voice in your ear saying, leave. Run away from me now. I don't know what I've become, but I know that anywhere is safer than here. That's the poem Home, or part of it, by Somali writer Warsan Shire. There's a humanitarian crisis unfolding right now, a refugee crisis on a scale the world has not witnessed since World War II. It's a set of horrors, frankly, too big to take in most of the time. It's hard to believe it's even real. Those bombed out buildings in Aleppo, mass starvation in Yemen, women and children and elders massacred in the Sudan, children drowning in the Mediterranean Sea. It's the images of kids that get to me most. Children in refugee camps or on the open roads. I grieve that the road is the risk that bears their name. That seems wrong to me. There were images not long ago of a little boy, a toddler, 3 years old, who washed up on a beach in Turkey. And I can't get that image out of my mind. His body is soft in an attitude of sleep. Knees tucked up under his belly, his rear end in the air, and his arms loose at his sides. His body is in the position my daughter takes when she sleeps, except that he is wearing shorts and his dark shoes are still tied neatly, and he is dead. A rescue worker lifts him gently from the shoreline and carries him away. What can I do, I think? It's so big and it's so complex, and in the face of it all, I feel very, very small. But luckily, the answer is close at hand. What can I do? It's simple. The answer is as close as the chalice we light each week in worship, as close as my neighbor Jane, and as close as the words on the wall of our sanctuary. The words above the chancel are biblical. They're called the Great Commandments, to love God and neighbor. Unitarian Universalists differ in our perspectives about God, but I hope we share a deep love for our fellow human beings. Jesus' teaching about this latter commandment is one of the most well-known passages in the Bible, and it goes like this. A lawyer approaches Jesus one day and asks how he can achieve eternal life. Jesus replies, "What have you read? What does it say in the law?" To love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind, and to love your neighbor as yourself. The answer is good and Jesus approves, but the lawyer presses the question a little further. "And who is my neighbor?" he asks. Jesus responds with a story. A man walking the dangerous road from Jerusalem to Jericho is beset by thieves. They rob him and beat him and leave him half dead. A priest passes by. When the priest spots the wounded man, he crosses to the other side of the road and continues on his way. Another man passes, a Levite. He too crosses to the other side of the road. And finally, a Samaritan comes near. He stops to care for the injured man. He binds the man's wounds. He puts him on the back of his animal and takes him to a nearby inn. The Samaritan gives the innkeeper money to care for him and promises to return in a few days' time to see how he's faring and to cover any additional expenses that might crop up. After telling this story, Jesus asks, Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers? The lawyer says, the one who showed mercy. And Jesus replies, go and do likewise. This parable is well known because its message is timeless and very clear. Take care of people that are hurting or are in need. This is a value at the core of the Christian faith, and it's central to our Unitarian Universalist faith as well. That's probably why these words were chosen to be painted on the wall of our sanctuary. The teaching is not complicated, but the lawyer questions Jesus anyway. Maybe the lawyer is looking for a technical answer or a loophole. Maybe he's looking for a way to dodge the demands of the direction he's been given, but it's simple. The neighbor is the one who shows mercy. Go and do likewise. Provide a space for shelter and healing. Get over the prejudice and aversion that would prevent you from attending to another's suffering. One of the sort of subtexts of the parable of the Good Samaritan is the assumption that the Samaritan and the man who's been injured come from different places. My neighbor Jane was a great lady, down to earth and funny and generous. She quilted a blanket for each of the children, my three children, and every year she gave each of them a $10 gift card to McDonald's, even the baby. I never actually let the boys buy anything with the gift cards, but we were all so touched every year. When she died a couple of weeks ago, a lot of people showed up to celebrate her life. And one day at my son's school, a total stranger pulled me aside to tell me a story. She said she'd known Jane, who'd lived in that house since she was in middle school. The woman was in her 60s, that she'd had a rough time in her own home growing up, and she used to spending time at my neighbor's house. When Jane found out that things were rough for this young woman at home, Jane gave her a key. Come over anytime, she said. You're always welcome. That was Jane. We never learn who the man on the road is in Jesus' parable. We never know why he's making the dangerous journey to Jericho from Jerusalem, what compels him to take that risk. We only know that he has been injured. We only know that we are called to love him by showing mercy and providing help. The story of the flaming chalice begins in 1930s Europe, in the turbulent years leading up to World War II. It's 1938, and Germany has annexed the Sudetenland, a region of Czechoslovakia inhabited by a large number of ethnic Germans. American Unitarians have ties in that region. They understand the suffering that is likely to result from Nazi takeover there, and they raise money to send people to Europe to bear witness to what's taking place and to support refugees who wish to flee. A Unitarian minister named Wetzel Sharp and his wife Martha, who's a social worker, travel to Prague to do what they can. They set up a network of supportive volunteers and agencies in Europe so that they can shepherd refugees to safety. A lot of the work is bureaucratic. They help to secure visas, help with travel arrangements and employment opportunities. They do work that's a lot like the work that helped my forebears get out of the South before the start of the Civil War, Unitarians who helped with the Underground Railroad out of the South into Ohio and into the East. That's how my family came to the Northeast. So these folks decide they need a logo for their letterhead, a recognizable symbol for their official correspondence with embassies and government agencies. A volunteer sketches a flaming chalice, and it becomes a symbol of the new Unitarian Service Committee. Later, it becomes the symbol of our religious tradition. The Sharps help save hundreds of Jews and dissidents from the Holocaust in collaboration with other Unitarians and another organization called the International Rescue Committee. Along the way, the Sharps are targeted and harassed by the Gestapo, but they persist. Martha Sharp returns home in 1940, narrowly escaping arrest by the Nazis. These many decades later, I consider the origin story of the flaming chalice a challenge, a reminder that supporting one another's journeys toward freedom is a core value of our faith. In the 1930s, anti-Semitism was widespread. Many Americans believed Jews were greedy and immoral, and that they already held too much power in the U.S. Religious discrimination was widespread in housing and social clubs, and there was a steep rise during this era of anti-Semitic organizations and acts of vandalism targeting Jewish sacred sites. It was an era of isolationism here. Charles Lindbergh, an American hero and celebrity, championed the America First movement, arguing against American involvement in European conflicts and advocating for strict restrictions on immigration. This meant that the U.S. was passive in its response to atrocities being committed in Germany and Austria and elsewhere. Our country was in many ways apathetic to the large numbers of Jewish refugees seeking safety on our shores. According to scholars at the American Holocaust Museum, the war heightened security concerns in Europe and the U.S. out of fear that the Nazis could smuggle spies and saboteurs in with refugees, immigration officials tightened visa policies for immigrants and non-immigrants. The State Department urged its diplomatic consuls in Europe to screen potential immigrants carefully, including those fleeing persecution, out of fear they could be pressured into working as agents for Germany. The U.S. turned back a whole boat of people, the St. Louis. The boat contained 900 Jewish refugees. The passengers, many of whom had already obtained visas, were sent back to Europe, and nearly a third died in the Holocaust. Our nation is experiencing a similar moment in our history. We're caught in a wave of isolationism, and we have become numbed to the point of inaction by hardship at home and by religious prejudice. Many Americans have averted our eyes en masse to the unfolding crisis in Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. We're living through an era of American First, much like the one championed by Charles Lindbergh in the 30s. Millions of people, children and women and men, have taken to a treacherous road to find a safe haven, to find freedom. They have left home by necessity. They have risked everything to find peace and safety for themselves and their children. To be a neighbor is to remember our shared humanity. To be a neighbor is to remember the other people on the road, to show mercy, to provide care and support. It is sometimes hard to do, but it's not hard to understand. Most likely, we cannot physically carry infants to safety, as the elderly woman on the cover of this morning's order of service did. But we can care in other ways. Religious prejudice is stopping the U.S. from providing refuge to people seeking sanctuary. We can work together to expand the number of refugees admitted to the United States. We can participate in conversations that dismantle prejudice in ourselves and in our communities. Later this afternoon, the Portsmouth Black Heritage Trail is sponsoring a conversation about what it's like to be Muslim in the Deep North. The talk will be at the Discover Portsmouth Center at 2. And there's a showing of the documentary film After Spring tomorrow evening at the Portsmouth Public Library. The film follows two Syrian families living in a massive refugee camp in Jordan. Go to one of these events to listen and learn and talk. Look out for opportunities to develop interfaith understanding and community connections. We can participate in demonstrations about the travel and refugee ban. We can write to public servants to express our views and offer financial support to the American Civil Liberties Union as they fight on behalf of those at risk. We can send money to organizations like the International Rescue Committee and the UUSC. Both organizations are on the ground providing direct relief and support, connecting families with food and shelter and health care and resources to launch a new life in a strange new land. They are working to help refugees build new lives, just as they have done since they were founded so many decades ago. In the ancient story, who was a neighbor? The neighbor was the one who stopped, the one who showed mercy. The neighbor is the one who provides shelter and compassion and material support. Go and do likewise. Amen.